guess it just takes a while. Okay, there we go. This is a text adventure done by a friend of mine. So this is the text adventure. So you just use your keyboard, right? So you guys wanna? Someone wanna just?
Sup.
Okay. So you're talking to somebody, okay? There's sound, actually. So maybe you guys can figure out what this is actually going to be doing.
So you press 1 or 2?
I press 1.
Yeah, the command, you
can
press 1 or 2.
Yeah. So now I'm going to press 1, okay? Because that's what I heard. You guys want to do 1?
Yeah.
Okay, why are you down?
Five.
You want to do 5? Okay, 2.
Whoa.
Do you guys want to try again? Okay, it's going to keep going. I'll just go again. I'll just do something reasonable, okay? So I'm going to say, what's up?
Yeah, awesome.
I'm going to say, I'm okay, how about you? Damn it, I don't care. So do you guys get a sense of what this game is doing?
Yeah. It's
so
like,
it's kind of like so the other side, the person on the other side is actually depressed, and then she's trying to ask you for help. And then every time you try to do anything, it ends up being like you don't care or whatever. So she gets even more depressed. So it's kind of like,
yeah,
it's kind of sad, right?
But it's pretty sad that both options are well
in
the end.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's an adventure, text adventure, right? It's very simple.
That's really cool. So wait, just so I can check, every time there's a command, there are two outcomes, right? There's a voice that comes out and the fact that it prints out that thing, right?
Well, but the printing that out is just one series. There's no extra thing, right? So literally, this program is probably like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 if statements, 7 or 8 if statements, something like that. Because it's just, everything else is, like, all that stuff you're seeing, like waiting and da-da-da, so that's down, that's just in sequence. There's a delay, and then it keeps. So I think I want to show this because I want to show you guys, like, you're not restricted to having a story. Do you know what I mean? Like, it could be anything that involving choice. You're welcome to tweak your story a little bit. It's fine. I'm just, you know, so mine was like very story. Some other people was like very graphic. You can also kind of go left and right, and that's something. I think somebody asked me about whether they can do that, and they can do that. So just open up your mind, and maybe the way you build it. Like, so for example, if you're doing, you know, you still want to do, you know, something about babies or something, right? Well, you can do that many ways, right? You could do that as like a machine that's looking at your baby or something, you know, from that viewpoint and how that moves, you know? Like, it doesn't have to be like literally story. I think that's the point. So in other words, imagine what your story that you just gave, right? Now you can imagine interpreting that story your own way. Like for this one was, actually, the story was like, this person is depressed, and then she asked for help. Whether you helped her or not, you go one way or the other. If you didn't help, you went the other way, right? But the way the story was told was through like an actual messaging app that you can see going on. You see what I'm saying? So you guys can, and also this also makes the game easier to code, because here all she has is just an image of this, right? And then she just posts the text onto the image. Super easy, really. So it looks fancy, but it's very easy. Post the text and you do the audio. Play it once. It's actually pretty easy. So I think, you know, instead of trying to come up with all this fancy code that you write, also between now and tomorrow, think about like how you might frame the story in an interesting way from a different viewpoint, or in a, you know, give yourself some constraints, I think. That's the main thing. Because I heard a lot of really cool ideas, like becoming Hollywood stars and like, you know, being elephants and dying and not dying. I heard like great story ideas. Now you can try to use processing to kind of constrain your viewpoint or the style that you're telling the story to some kind of well-done, well-defined format, and that will help you kind of both code the game and also be able to tell the story. So, yeah? Cool. Anyways, so I hope you enjoyed that. Let's start our lecture today. We're a little bit, it's fine, we're having fun. I never regret not going through the slides, because end up doing stuff. Actually, probably most of today's stuff would not be on the slide, because I also made some slides today. Okay, so the main point of today is to talk about functions, right? So what a function is it's a way to map inputs to outputs. Okay, so the agenda today, we're talking about what a function is, what the structure of the function is, and I'm going to tell you about a command called map, which I think I told. Did I tell Zena, I think? I might have told Zena about, remember mapping different number ranges? So we're going to sort of teach you how to kind of do that, because it's a very important function, map function. Okay, so I think of functions as like sentences. They're kind of like what you're going to say, but they have a certain style, a certain grammar that's also always repetitive. So therefore, you kind of put certain parameters in your sentence and it'll say a certain thing out. So that's what the function is supposed to do. And different sentences will have different forms. So what is a function? It's a set of commands that's related that does a specific task, right? So for example, drawing a rectangle, that's a function. Getting a time, that's a function. So why do we use functions? So most of it is we want to be able to reuse the function all the time, right? So whenever you find yourself repeating things, like for example, the cat hissing, you know, in your story, if it's done repeatedly, that means it's a function. Like it's something to be redone. Now, if it's very different every time, it's still okay because your function can take arguments. The more arguments you give your function, the more modifiable your function becomes. So it's up to you to trade off how much of it is a new function, how much of it is a same function but taking different parameters. Parameters are the inputs to the functions, basically. So it allows you to organize things, to abstract that idea. And your code will look much better when they're in the functions. Yeah, Fifi?
Can you have a function
like another
function?
Yes. Actually, that's the exercise that I came up with today for a function within a function. That's a great question.
Just trying to
press mouse press inside of the drawer. Mouse press inside. Oh, okay. So I think what you're trying to do is define the function inside the drawer, right? No, you can't do that. So everything. If you define the function, it has to be its own definition. But you can call a function from draw. Right? It doesn't make too much sense to call mouse press from draw, but you could. Like so what happens if you do that is basically mouse press will be invoked every time you press the mouse, and it will be invoked all the time because it's drawing. It's just kind of a funny, you know. Yeah, but you can call it in the function. But you cannot define functions within another function. Like, the function has to be defined on a separate chunk of code. But it doesn't matter where you put that definition, as we saw before in switching the setup and the draw on the first day. Good question. So again, when you see stuff that's being repeated, you want to use less code and you want to use one function to capture that. So if you look at this program, that's like basically I take out the cell phone to check the time. Once I know the time, I go to class. And then when I'm giving a presentation, I need to time myself, so I'm looking at the time again. When I start having lunch, finish having lunch, I want to check the time again, right? So all that stuff was about checking the time, all that stuff in green, right? So we can put all that stuff into a function called getTheTime, and then all you have to do is just call the getTheTime function within your program, right? So am I going a little fast, or is it...
No, it's kind of like what you mentioned, about getTo determine to a function
you could have in Spring. Cool, so we kind of... Good. All right. So again, so you organize your functions into these kind of blocks. And so make sure it's nice to easy to read and easy to debug, and make sure you have lots of comments, right? So this is just, I think this is just trying to illustrate that when you're writing the functions just have the names that make sense, like buying a flight, booking accommodation, etc. Usually you want to use capital letters for the beginning of words and the functions, usually. Again, this is just a pseudocode, really, for what the functions are actually going to do, right? But in this case, they haven't put in the inputs and outputs yet. Okay, so another reason for having functions is you want to abstract out the details. So that's why processing has a bunch of built-in functions that you don't need to, like... You know, for example, if you can't draw a rectangle without using lines, you're going to do that, you know, within your code, you're going to have lots and lots of code just to draw one rectangle. But processing already took care of that for you. It gave you a function to draw the rectangle. And so the level of complexity of what processing gives you, it's up to, you know, the design of that language, basically. So, the structure of the function, again, the parameters are the inputs. So if you see the thing on your right, the blue guys are the parameters. And then you have the name of the function. And then you have what the function returns, right? So there's actually kind of a, for those of you who are interested, there are actually kind of reasons for saying return, you know, the return argument, like what the function gives you, and then the function... And then, you know, the inputs is because, like, the way they do initially do functional programming, you can actually think of function as an object as well. That's why it's written this way. So, if that made no sense to you, it's okay. But basically, in functional languages, it's saying that this function is the type that gives you an int. So that makes this function kind of an object that you can treat. And in the more advanced programming languages, you can actually put function handles as arguments for other functions. We're not going to do that in processing. But it's kind of similar to what Phoebe was asking, actually. So you use a function and you say, okay, here's a new function that does something with this function. But I can now change a new function. So for example, plus minus divide. I throw that into a function that does something to numbers involving pluses, but now I bring in and I throw that in with something that does minuses, for example. So that was probably a little bit complicated for you guys, but the idea is a function can be objects too. Like functions can be treated like an entity as well. If that didn't make sense, just ignore all of it. You don't have to know any of that. Okay, so. What you do need to know is just how to call functions, right? So if it doesn't have parameters, then you don't need any arguments within that function, right? You just do function, you still need the parentheses, but just parentheses, parentheses, right? And then you always want to name the function something that makes sense, like don't do like do this, do that on the right there. Like you should actually do something. And then you have the return type, which is the type of the function. So that's a function that returns an int. We probably haven't even seen a function that returns something yet, right? Actually.
Return function?
Yeah, it gives you something back.
Like a remote output?
Yeah. So,
like Prince wants to
tomorrow. Yeah, yeah. So, here, it'll be easier with the example. But in this case, basically, the function type is the orange stuff, right? So that means that's the kind of stuff that your function gives back. It could give you a Boolean value back. So in other words, like, is hungry. That can be a function that returns a Boolean, either true or false.
Oh.
You see it? Let me... So this part is a little tricky. Let me just... the difference between functions and variables, right? Everything here is that as a hungry Boolean, right? So just imagine is hungry. So this is a is hungry Boolean variable, right? That's not what I'm talking about here right now. You could do it this way, right? But you could also have it as a function, right? So the function is a it gives you Boolean back, so that's the return type. And then the name of the function is hungry, right? And then it can take arguments. In this case, I'm not going to take arguments.
What arguments
mean? Arguments are inputs, sorry. Inputs. So I could take arguments. I don't have to. Like, for example, I can take the time, right? I can find the time t. Right? So, like, the time t equals 6 a.m., and I'm going to say it's hungry false or something.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? So, this is the bracket. And then, whatever you're doing with the time, you at the end, you have to return something. So, you have to write return either true or false. And then, else return false or something.
Oh, so we tell it what is hungry would be either true or false.
Yeah, we return a Boolean.
Yeah.
We return a Boolean. Question?
Yeah, so like, is that so the amount that returns is just like, I couldn't have said, but like, what do you do with that? Is you just have that value that's returned to you? And
yeah.
There?
Somebody will call this function, right?
Uh-huh.
So, somebody in the draw, right, is going to go. It's going to say if, you know, call this function is hungry with the argument of 7 p.m. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
You see what's going on? So somebody's going to call this function to ask whether it's hungry, and the function's job is to provide a Boolean given the time.
So
it's
basically the if true or if false, and then you can
see. Yeah. You can also do that with is hungry Boolean, right? So you keep track of the Boolean in your draw, right, or out in the mobile space, and then whenever it gets to 7 p.m., you update the is hungry to be false, and then your program does something else. So there, you're not doing it with a function. But, yeah. But what we're turning out you can do now is whenever possible, when you have a chunk of code that belongs together, you write a function for it, and then in your main program, you just call the function. So it's actually kind of similar to the mousepress stuff, right? Mousepress is a global Boolean variable that you can always check anytime, right? But it's also a function that kind of gets invoked. So in some ways, it's kind of a translation between whether you indicate something as a variable versus as a function. But whenever you have code that is doing some well-defined process, something like draw mouse, right? So within draw mouse, you can have, you label something, write something, et cetera. There'd be like 10 steps, right? But you don't want to do that every time in the draw, right? So what you do is you put that thing in a function called drawMass, and then you just have to call drawMass once whenever you need it. Like if your story gets to your drawMass. Otherwise, you don't need to.
So if there's a draw function and then before the draw function you add another function, does it erase the function before it just go off?
explain
whatever happens from the function, how it comes after draw. Like, kind of erase what happens on draw, or like, how does it kind of function directly with each other?
Okay, so when whoever is calling this guy, it's almost like this function is kind of inside this block of code. So it'll just do that. So if you call the draw master, then draw, right? It will draw as long as you're not calling background, you know? It'll just draw that thing. And then you will see that. Like, it won't, you know, it won't erase it. Now, after the draw, you can do something. Like, you know, after the draw mask, you can now do something to draw that changes what happens. But it's almost like that block of code is inside the name of the
block.
Yeah.
How do you call it
into
draw? It's not voiding it. Then
you
can't
avoid it. No. So when you call it, you just do this, right? You just do is. So for example, is hungry, I guess. You just call it by the name. You don't need to have an ingredient. This is only when you define the function. Is it clear to everyone? Does it make sense? Like that. When you define this function, you need to have a return type, and then the name of the function, and then the arguments, the inputs, basically. So when you call the function, you just need the name and the input. Because whatever that comes out, you're going to be using. You know, like, for example, if you have a pool, you know, A equals is hungry, right? You know, 8 p.m. That's the calling of the function. You give the actual value that you're passing along. So in this case, you're not telling them the type of the value, you just give them the value. And then you give them the name of the function, but you call it yet. And then you just assign it to whatever you need to return. If you don't return it, you don't need that part. You just do only the name of the function.
Okay.
If the function doesn't have any arguments, then it's just literally just the name of the function, parentheses, parentheses.
So let's take something that happens every time you press a certain button. Can it be a function?
Mm-hmm.
And it would be like, say, some draw, okay, again, draw, and whatever. Parentheses,
big amount
of
test,
or like.
Are you talking about the definition or the calling?
The definition, like how do we define the function if it's every test or like amount
of
test, right?
Well, amount of test is kind of special in the sense that the system provides it's called an interrupt, it provides a signal to that function specifically because it's called mouse press.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of special in that way. So the key press, mouse press stuff, is kind of like it automatically comes with something that calls it. It will be called every time there's a user input. It doesn't need it from the draw.
Okay.
So it's kind of special in that way. But say you have another function, I think what you're saying is like, say you have another function that gets called somewhere else, right? Then it just depends on where that gets called. Yeah, but the definition is you still need to have a return type. The return type, so it could be an object, but in this case, most of the time it's int or float. And then the name of the function, and then the type of the argument, and then the actual argument.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do it. And then in the calling, you just give them an input. Yeah, it's good. The first time you few times to do it, it's going to be confusing because you'll be like, oh, is that the type of the number or the number, right? Because if it's the type of the number, but the number is like 10. So 10 is the thing that you're doing when they're calling, right? But in the definition, you just say int variable in the definition. And the reason for that is because in the definition, you want to be able to work for any int passive. That's why you use a variable for the passive.
Oh, okay.
Alright. Does it make sense? It's a little confusing probably, functions, but it'll be easier to just look at code, I think. Like, it's kind of It sounds really complicated, but it's again, one of those things where I think of just like kids learning language. Like, you don't really tell them that much. They kind of just pick it up. You know, so it's going to be the same for you guys. Okay, so if you don't need to return anything, then you just put void. That's why we have void, right? So I think the first day of class, you were like, one of you was like, what does that void mean? That was weird. But this is why, because it's the function is not returning anything. That's why it's void. Okay, so this is the most basic function, void not returning anything, and in the parentheses, there's nothing, so it's not accepting anything either. There's no input to the function either. It literally just gets called whenever somebody calls it. Okay, so it can also return strings, right? So so this example, basically what you see is like, it returns a string, right? So what's my name is actually returning a string. And when you call it, you have to make a string that accepts what it returns. Do you guys see that? So that function returns a string, right? So when you call it, you have to have something which accepts what the function gives you. It's clear? So, and then this is just, you know, so printing out this thing is the same thing as printing out this thing, actually, because it's just, you're both in the case, you're printing out what is being returned by this function. Yeah. And then when it's void, then you're not going to be returning anything, right? So you don't need this string something equals, right? Because it's just going to... So because it's void, you don't have to return anything, so you just call it. Any questions so far? So fairly clear. Okay. So the parameters are the inputs, like I was saying, and then so you have in this case lots of floats. So these give you the flexibility, like I was saying, because you can now give them any floats and your function will calculate something. It also means that you're going to have a responsibility as a programmer to make all the cases work out. So in this case, like the rect is accepting a certain float, right? So what if you pass a boolean to it? Now what if you call rect true true 2 4? What would happen? Exactly. It's because it's not the right type. So you have to give the right type of input to the function. But if it's the case that your user is giving the right type, you want to make sure your calculation is not doing anything that will break it, right? Like it's not dividing by zero, for instance, right? It's handling all the cases. It's handling the negative cases as well as the positive case. So that's kind of the responsibility of the programmer to make it work. Right. So in processing, remember that thing where we gave the RGB values even though it was over 255? Well, in that case, processing just said, like, I'm just going to, even though that doesn't make sense, I'm just going to make that case still work by, you know, having a ceiling on the 255. I'm just going to treat any number bigger than that to be 255. So that was an example of taking care of all the cases that you're going to get. Oh, you mean in the processing functions, right? Yeah, so the processing functions, you have to, if you don't know what the function does, you have to go here. So you have to go to, most of the time it will be clear, but you go to the processing language reference, and then, you know, you have basically every function here, right? So, for example, like, you don't know what rect does, right? So you just look for rect. So you go to rect, and it kind of explains what you need. You see that? So it kind of explains that these are all floats. It's expecting floats. Right? I mean, it turns out ints work as well, but... It still works, yeah. Yeah, I guess... Yeah. But yeah, but it's definitely true. Like, if you don't know what it's accepting, you actually have to look it up. If it's like, if it's a function that you're using. Like, most of the time it'll just be obvious because it's like, is hungry. Like, what does that take? Well, it's got to be a Boolean. It's probably not a number, you know? Et cetera, you know? Okay, any questions? Any questions? Okay, so this is what the functions are doing. They have some parameters, which are the inputs. And then based on those inputs, which can be variable. So the inputs are variables, right? It's going to do some calculation and return something specific back. Okay? You can return anything back. You can return a variable back that has a certain value, or you can return the actual value back. Okay, I think it sounds a little bit complicated, but I think once we do the examples, it'll be fine. Okay, so now just a little bit, going back a little bit about variables, right? So this distinction only makes sense because of functions, right? So we're going to define two things here. So one is the global variables. They're defined like basically at the very top of the page of your processing, right? And because they're declared there, any function can access them. So including mousepress, including... So you know those functions that are... Well, I guess the example is here. This int c, right? Or for us, like the RGB, for example, we did last time, right? This variable can be used by the setup. It can be used by the draw, right? It can, if you want, you can... The sum can use it too, but the sum is not using it right now. So that's why it's a global variable, right? But there's also local variables. Local variables are basically defined only within the function. And so they kind of expire when you're outside the function. So, I don't know if there's a... Yeah, so the result here in the sum, that's a local variable because it's defined within the sum, right? So it says, now let's make a variable... That's an integer that's called result, and set result equal to the something combination of the parameters here, right? So when you make a combination of the parameters and you store the result, result is a local variable that's storing your computation. And then you can actually do a lot of stuff to the result, right? You can transform it in many ways. But at the end, you can return it. You don't have to return the local variable. The local variable can just be what you use to calculate things, but it could also be something that you return.
Okay, so since I see that message, the bottom look like the way you run the program,
because the result
is not a global variable.
Because
it's not, like, defined.
Yeah, so this is the problem here. Right. So this is all, yeah, you're totally right. So this is all correct within this thing, but here, because result is a local variable, not a global one, it was never defined. So if this guy never understands result, even though it's the same name as this result.
Would it kind of bring it from that sum with that function?
You could do, the way you can do it is you could do like, you know, int r equals, you know, or you could even do int result equals sum of, you know, 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Then you have some other variable that happens to be called result or whatever you want to call it, and you can now change that.
Would you recommend just doing a global variable instead of like, you know, missing using...
No, always use local. Use as local as you can.
Are you able to, so once you've returned result inside that function, can you like get it out like and to use other places?
Could you like
you can only get it out by getting a return from the sum.
Okay.
So you get like the return of sum and use that in a different function.
Yeah, you can call the sum anywhere you want, but whatever you call it, this whole thing is going to happen, and you can't go inside up here to get it yet. So if this thing wasn't returned, you would never even be able to get into it, ever.
So somewhere down the line, you can just type in return space sum,
You don't need to return though. You're talking about the calling part, right?
Like if you wanted to get results, it's like take that, but instead of all the complications, you said take the sum, do a return on the sum in order to get to the result. What were you saying? Like,
right, can you explain what you
had? I think she's saying, so when you, so I was asking if you can, get the results out of that function.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you only need to do it by getting the sum, but
you call the sum with
the print function if you want to print the result.
Oh, okay.
So that's how it's being programmed.
Oh, you mean printing it here, right?
We're just getting out. We're just saying getting out of that function. Right?
Yeah. How would you write that out? Where would you put it in?
What do you want to do first? Can you?
What you just explained in your answer to this question, I was saying, can you tell me how you can do that? So what is calling on the sum?
Oh, that is back here, setting, print line, sum of 2 and 3.
Okay.
Or something. So basically, what I mean is, every time you want to get access to any of this stuff, the only thing you can do is you make an int and call sum. Or, equivalent doesn't need making an int because the sum of whatever will just be some int that it prints out. But, if you want to do a properly, you have to get an int.
Replace results with, within that print in parentheses, replace that with the word sum.
Yeah, exactly. Sum of whatever, 2 and 3 or whatever it is that you want to, exactly. Yeah, so instead of result here, you put sum of 2 and 3. Or you could do int r equals sum of 2 and 3, print line r. You can also do that.
Am I literally typing sum space of space 2?
No, you type print line with sum, parentheses, 2, comma, space 3. I mean, we can go into that in the coding. This is kind of like details, but basically the big idea is just that whatever you're doing locally here only belongs to here.
Okay.
You can't access it here. In fact, this is just a bug, basically.
Yeah, they did that on purpose.
Yeah. And so what that also means is your global variables really ought to be global. Like, they ought to be like I like them to be kind of either constant or very, you define them at the beginning of the story, Like, for example, your width and height of your window or something. Then you can define that globally. But stuff that you can want to change kind of dynamically as you move along, then they belong in local variables. So you want to try to do things locally as much as you can. Because otherwise the global stuff, if you change it in every function, you're not going to be able to keep track of what's going on. So let me give the kind of the summary advice from all this, once you guys can process this information. The summary advice is, do not have global variables that you're changing everywhere. That's the summary advice. So in other words, if you have something global here, it better be something that everybody needs, or it's a constant that you're never going to change, or something like that. Because otherwise, if that value gets changed here, and here, and here, it's going to be super confusing. You're going to have a hard time debugging. Okay, so keep your global variables to a minimum. Just the ones you need. Yeah. Alright, confusing enough? This is probably the most confusing lecture. Hopefully after this, we'll just The rest of the lectures are just adapting to this lecture to make it palatable. Okay. So a function can also be called within another function. This is what Fifi asked earlier. So in this case, they're calling this multiplier function within the function called sum. Okay? So I know you guys are not all completely alert right now, but I'm going to give you this exercise that I made up to kind of illustrate the idea that we can call functions within functions. Okay? So, does anybody know what this sequence of numbers, and how they work? Nice. You're totally awake. Good job. So, anybody know what this is? So, this is called the Fibonacci numbers. So, if you look at the first two numbers, when you add them together, you get to the next number, and then you look at the previous two, etc., etc., etc. You know, 2 plus 3 equals 5, 3 plus 5 equals 8, 8 plus 5 equals 13, etc., 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 right? So, turns out this very simple definition of the numbers are actually very universal. So this is kind of the sequence of the number, right? So so this is the 0, the 1st, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th, etc. number in the sequence, right? But it turns out this sequence of numbers is used all over nature by God, basically. Because this is kind of a two-dimensional analog of the Fibonacci number. It turns out these ratios, I mean, this, the way these lengths are related to each other is just what we said, 2, 3, 5, 8, etc., etc., etc. So the shell, you know, this is a Fibonacci number. Pretty amazing, right? Like that you have this kind of, yeah, that you have these very simple rule that actually allows you to have amazing structures in nature. Yeah, and not only that, but there's some crazy shit that's actually following the Fibonacci number. Solving the hedgehog's head is like, you know, a manifestation of the Fibonacci curve, basically. And then, yeah, this is like a whole video. I don't know her name. It was Fox.
Boy.
Oh, it was a boy.
I thought it was you.
Yeah, you too. You too. Both ones first. And anybody know what this is?
Yes.
Huh? It's famous for having the Mount Fuji in the back. So this is like, it's called the Great Wave of Kanagawa. It's like a very famous print from Japan. Okay, so how would I write a Fibonacci, you know, so say I want the 7th Fibonacci number. How do I calculate it? Sorry.
So
x of 7 is just x of 5 plus x of 6, right? But what's x of 5 and x of 6? Like, what's x of 5?
X of 5? Uh-huh. 5 minus 2?
X 3 and x 4. Exactly. So, basically what's happening is you have a tree in your execution. Okay, let's do like x of 5, so that I have enough space. This is the unknown portion of this one. So you want to calculate x of 5, right? In order to do that, you just have to calculate x of 4 and x of 3, right? X of. In order to calculate that, you need x of 2 and x of 1, right? In order to calculate this, you need x of 3 and x of 2. So, did everybody see that? So basically, you're going to get this tree. And then what happens in the lowest branches of the tree? What happens at the very bottom? So I'll tell you, this is going to be the bottom. Because you know what x of 1 is. Right? X of 1 is going to be 1. Right? X of 0 is going to be 0. Yeah. So what that means is, if you know x of 0 and x of 1, you can calculate any Fibonacci number. Because it will just make this tree. Right?
Oh, if we know the root, we can know the tree.
Yeah. So you can call this function, and this function can just call itself. You see that? So this is an example of a function calling itself. It's called recursive calling anyway, but, you know, it's recursively calling itself. Basically, it's calling itself on a different argument. So this is the same function, right? Because the function just is defined in this way. So how does everybody have a good idea how to write this in top policy?
This is an advanced exercise, but...
Are you going to have to write recursive, or like how does it...
You just have to call a function within the function. Like call itself in the function.
We call itself within the function.
Yeah. So let's do it. So now I'm going to have just a function, okay? I hope this is not too confusing, but if it is, we'll do something easier after this, okay? We'll call it Fibonacci, right? And then what is it going to return? It's going to return an int, first of all, right? Okay? So yeah, follow along with me. And it's also going to return, it's going to take in a, let's say, an n, right? Okay. So whatever it returns has to be an int, right? Can anybody help me? I'll give you a hint. Here, I'll give you a hint. Look. This could be pseudocode. Okay, good. If x is equal to?
Or n, is it equal to 1?
N is not equal to 1. Okay. So it could be 0 though, right?
Oh,
so
if n is bigger than 1, yeah.
N is greater than or equal to 1.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? So remember, you're trying to build this, okay? Okay, all right. So you're telling me to do... Right. Yeah. But how do I put that here? Okay, so hold on. So let's make an int called a result, okay? Okay?
Yeah.
Just to, you don't need it, but, you know. Result equals, so what you're saying is you call fib of n minus 2 plus fib of n minus 1. Right? And then, I don't need that. And then, whatever happens, at the end, we turn the rest, right? Alright? It's not initialized, it just wants something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to have to write fib each time, fib n minus 1.
Yeah, because you're calling yourself.
Why does it have to be greater than?
I don't know, I just heard it back there. Why? Somebody explain.
We know the answer to
So what else do you want me to say here then? Huh? So what if n is equal to zero? What's going on here?
Oh, so we do else.
Yeah, else and error.
Or else n equals zero.
Else? You mean with, right?
Yeah.
I actually already did that, but it's okay. It's fine. Okay, so does this case work for n equals one? So if n equals zero, right? It's gonna make it where it's called zero, it's gonna set it to be zero and it returns zero. That's what you want. That's perfect, right?
Yeah.
If n equals one, does this code work?
Wait, you put the else within the if statement? Oh, wait, no.
Or so it should just be n if n is greater than 1.
So if n is greater than 1, okay. So what if n equals 1?
So there should be else res equals 1.
Like that?
Yeah.
Wait, should we add an else res? If it was n equals 0, it would still be 1. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need
an else if. What do you want me to do? Else if?
Yeah, else if n equals 1.
Okay.
And then else n equals, rest equals 0.
Okay. Okay. Is this more clear? So if n is greater than 1, you're going to do the calculation. Otherwise, if n equals to 1, then you're going to set it to 1 because, you know, fib of 1 is 1. Otherwise, n must be 0, right? And if n is 0, then it's 0. And then you're going to return the result. Do you guys want to try this? Okay, so we're going to do... So we don't need to draw because we're just going to print it out once. And then we're going to do print line fib of, what do you guys want to do? 4? What should this give me?